Hello, I'm Kyle Caldwell, and this is On The Money, a weekly look how to get the best out of your savings and investments. Today, we're going to be looking at the investment case for China. On the one hand, the valuations are cheap, but on the other hand, political risk is par for the course when investing in China. To discuss both those topics, I recently caught up with Ewan Markson-Brown, fund manager of the Crux Asia Ex-Japan Fund. So going against the crowd is a high risk, but potentially high reward approach to investing. One major market that stands out today as being particularly unloved is China. One reason why some investors are shying away from China is due to political risk. Over the past couple of years, we've seen political interventions into China's technology and education sectors. What are your thoughts, Ewan? Are the political risks too significant, or is political risk a price worth paying when investing in China?
It's a good question. I think, unfortunately, today that political risk has actually gone global. In China, it's actually been realised, though, in terms of hits to individual companies and sectors and definitely to stock market valuations. The best thing is to sort of take a step back and sort of, what's your mental model on this? And it's first of all, what's the incremental change in that political risk? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? And secondly, what are we paid to take the risk? What's built into expectations or the valuations of the companies that we're buying? In terms of the first part, the incremental change, you know, we've seen the crackdown on the technology side. We've seen it on education. We've seen it on property. We've seen the weak economy. What we can know, though, is that ever since those policies came out in sort of late 2020, early 21, basically from 2022 onwards, the regulatory function has been more formalized. It's been far more supportive in both the technology and the educational side, and also more recently in the property side. So all of the signs are actually showing that incrementally things are getting either less worse or more positive, and we're past that crackdown stage. What have we been paid to take risks? Some of our US-listed Chinese stocks have, you know, been trading at or below cash. You can buy big tech companies in single-digit to low double-digit P multiples with decent growth rate. Growth businesses, which we think are fantastic on a global basis, are trading at 50% discounts plus to their global peers. So an awful lot's in the price, and we think incrementally things are slowly getting better.
It's been a tough couple of years for China's stock market. Other reasons for investor caution include China's potential property bubble and geopolitical tensions with the West. What are your views on both of those areas of concern?
So in property, I think we need the same model. What's happening to the incremental? Property was also a very large sector. I think it was over 10% of GDP in China back in 2021. And an awful lot of leverage went into it. And the government deliberately, the whole houses for living, was about reducing the size of the property sector. And I think sales and pre-sales are down 70 to 80% from the highs. Now, that's been achieved, but obviously at quite a big cost. What's important for us as investors is that the incremental impact or negative impact to GDP growth and sentiment is declining. So this year, the impact, I think it'll be less than half of last year, less than half again next year, and I've probably turned positive in 26, 27. And this is without any real government intervention as it just rolls off. So property is still going to be a drag, but incrementally far less drag than it's been before. I think, and just one thing on that, you probably don't want to be investing in the property stocks themselves, because often you get defaults as recovery starts coming through. But I think bottoming of the property market leads to slightly faster GDP growth and also improved domestic consumption. Just on the geopolitical side, this is an area where I think sort of 18 months ago, we felt that going into the US elections, there would be some rapport with China and things would improve. The incremental positive has been so weak that we've been really disappointed. I think what we really have to say is that so much uncertainty, it is hard to call. What we need in the West is renewed leadership from stronger Western leadership and a stronger view of where we sit and where China sits in the world. So let's see what happens. But incrementally, again, I don't think it's going to be a big negative from where we are. And what's in the price is obviously very severe. it's been very meaningful for the trade tensions, which have been ramped up. And you've seen China really step out of lie low, be quiet, and grow. They want to be a superpower. They want to push further out in terms of a sort of a spatial reach, but in sort of just recognition. And that's obviously they've done it in a way in which has been highly aggressive and has created an awful lot of pushback. Again, I'm going for a lot is in the price and a lot of understanding. The incremental, it's really hard to get a grip on, given the changing issues in the world today. What I will put out there is that 35% of world manufacturing is done in China today, and I think that's going up. In autos, you've already seen them. I think 2 years ago, they were 20% of world autos. Again, I think that's going to 40% of world autos. So you're getting China actually increase its exports, increase its share of world manufacturing, despite all of these trade tensions. And that just shows how dependent we are in the West on China as a manufacturing hub. So there's an awful lot, you know, we have a vast symbiotic relationship with China, with globalization, with trade. And I think it's really going to be hard for anyone to really divorce from that. So it is a risk. Let's see whether new leadership in the West actually on the change makes that a lot better.
So Ewan, you manage both a China fund and an Asia ex-Japan fund. Could you talk us through the China exposure that you have in the Asia ex-Japan fund? How much do you have invested in that country, and how does it compare with the benchmark index?
Yeah, so the way we look at the benchmark, so the benchmark in China roughly is about 30% today, and it's about 4.5% in Hong Kong. We've got about 36% in China, so overweight China by about 6%, and nothing in Hong Kong. I've had nothing in Hong Kong for over a decade. So actually on combined China, Hong Kong, we're sort of about 3% overweight. This is just today's date. It is highly volatile for the last month or so, given where the market's been up and down. We think that given where valuations are, where expectations are, a neutral to overweight is required at this point in the cycle, especially when we see elevated excitement, especially in other parts of the market, especially on a global level.
And given, you know, it's been a tough couple of years for China's stock market, and as a consequence of that, which obviously brings opportunities, is that the valuations are low. Are there any particular areas you'd highlight that you're finding more attractive on that basis?
I always divide the China stock market into different parts, and there's the private sector and there's the state-owned sector. And the state-owned sector generally is an underperformer, except in years where everything goes terrible. So actually for the last 18 months, you'd be much better off owning a state-owned enterprise, a large utility, an oil and gas company, a big bank. And that's because the Chinese government or its proxies tends to be buying the share prices of these companies. That's not what we do. We're not interested in slow-growing government-controlled businesses. We're interested in the private sector. And obviously, for the last 3 years, with, as we mentioned, the regulatory risk, the political risk, and the slowing economy, the private sector has been, I think, decimated would be the right word for it, especially in terms of share prices. We can see high-quality tech stocks, high single digits to low double digits in terms of PE multiples. We can see growth companies at 56% discount to their global peers. Within all this, you know, there's so much opportunity. It's like, where do you start? I've really got three factors that I'm looking for. First of all, can my business gain domestic market share in whatever industry it's in? And has it been doing so for the last couple of years? Number two, can it go abroad and gain incremental market share in the global market despite political risks? And number three, is it innovating in some way? And if it ticks at least two, if not three of those boxes, I think there's a pretty good view that its earnings are going to beat and the valuation should start moving up over time.
And do you have exposure to China's technology companies? Is that an area that you look to find opportunities?
Yes. So I guess within China, technology is probably one of my largest areas. So I sort of tech, consumer, it sort of comes together because they're all innovating, whether it's hard tech or soft tech. So we like PDD in e-commerce. We really like the new electric vehicle companies like Li Auto or BYD. And we have some of the more sort of hardware names, which sort of are developing, like Zhongli, InnoLight, developing AI-related products. So very much on that higher, faster growth, more exciting, more innovative companies within the portfolio.
And while it's very difficult, if not impossible, to make predictions, do you think we've now reached peak pessimism for China? And could you outline sort of the strongest reasons you have for optimism?
I would love to say with peak pessimism, the history of the world is that sometimes things can always get worse. But we're optimists. And I always think that things eventually get better and people make the right decisions for themselves and for humanity in general. And if I lay down China to the fundamental, what are we looking for? Is that there's two factions within the governing party in China. And this is really down on, do we need more state to achieve our aims by 2050, which is effectively a middle-income country, more power on the global stage, wealth for the poor, or do we need more private sector to deliver those goals? You and I probably realise that it's freedom, it's on an economic and almost a little bit more on a political level, which drives economic growth over the long run and drives effectively wealth creation. And I think for the last 30 years, that's what the Chinese have believed as well. And they've, the last 3 years, especially the last 18 months, they've had a bit of a wobble and they've supported the state-owned enterprises again. And these wobbles they have been doing for the last 30 years and they've always reverted back to actually let's support the private sector again because it's what creates jobs, it's what creates innovation. And in the long run, it keeps the Communist Party in power. So that is the optimistic view, is that they will swing back to the private sector, back to growth with it. And I think they're pretty, you know, given where they are at the moment, they have very little choice. So the hope story is that happens within the next 12 to 18 months.
I also wanted to ask you about India. So it's the biggest country weighting in the funds. India has been a very strong stock market performer since COVID. What are the main reasons behind that rally? And could you give us a flavour of the sorts of companies and sectors that you're invested in within India?
Yes, yeah, so it's about 23% of the fund today, which is much higher than it's ever been. And India's really has become a proper market and a significant country on the world stage in the last few years. And I was there just a couple of weeks ago, and what was really noticeable was that it felt very much like it was back in 2004 or 2005. In their last CapEx cycle. And this is a country which hasn't had a domestic CapEx cycle call for about a decade. And it's happening again. And that's why people are getting really excited. Utilization across the board is high, and that requires more CapEx, especially in the power sector. And that's where actually a lot of our investments are in India and also globally. Because of the shift to renewable power, we need to upgrade our grids. And I think I've seen numbers of $70 trillion upgrading. So 5% of the fund across the board is invested in transmission grid capex, and about 3%, 3.5% of that's in India and for Indian domestic markets. We also like software companies in the IT space, which are exposed to global trends in the electric vehicle market, some in the aerospace market. And we also like industrials, let's call it China plus one, but companies which are doing low-end manufacturing, which is growing rapidly, 30, 40, 50%. Also companies in the space area, in nuclear and in defence within that domestic market. So valuations are definitely expensive. Sentiment is high. It's the polar opposite to China. Why do we still like the market? Is that everything I see is that we're still very early cycle in terms of the corporate mindset. And this is really important to note that if I take you back to the last cycle, which did very well and then dramatically blew up, at this point in the cycle, all the corporates were leveraging up, doing M&A overseas, and really seeing how wonderful India is. This time, despite rising share prices, they're already conservative. And that just gives me confidence that this is going to be a much longer cycle in India than we've seen before.
And why have the share prices been rising? Why is there a lot of investor optimism towards India? I mean, as mentioned, we've seen its stock market perform very well over the past couple of years, which is in complete contrast to China.
Well, firstly and foremostly, the earnings growth is coming through. So a lot of these stocks are compounding that we're only 20 to 50%, which is, if I look globally, that's probably one of the highest, if not the highest, earnings growth rates in the world. And really think about, you have to go down out of the large caps. So the large caps have been okay, but it's really the mid to small. And I'm looking around, India is a properly functioning market. Many of our markets like China haven't been functioning very well for the last 2 or 3 years because of the macro. And as discussed, India, you can have price discovery. You've got companies actually being able to deliver. And they have been. And so that's why the valuations have actually gone up to sort of the 20, 30 times levels of some of these stocks, because they've been delivering and we think they can deliver in the future. So you've always got a portfolio very much. We've got this sort of growth value in China on a optimistic view that things will improve. Whilst an India story, which we think is a couple of years in, with a high, it's more recognized, but we think they will deliver or even beat on earnings expectations in the next 3 to 5 years.
And if I tried to push you to pick between the two, which one do you think offers the best long-term opportunities for investors, China or India?
So it's really hard to make a call on this. If China goes back to the private sector and shifts properly over the next couple of years, then your technology-related names in China, your growth stocks, will be fantastic return candidates and will beat everything else. But you want to be a stock picker because you don't want to be owning the state-owned enterprises in that environment. India will just continue to compound at a 15 to 25% rate over the next 3 to 5 years, with the occasional wobble like we just seen this week. Every wobble, I think, in India is a buying opportunity. India is far more like the US market now, where it's sort of, there's a structural buy of a domestic consumer, good quality companies. China's more that smaller sort of risk in your fund, more asymmetric trade, where if it works out, you're going to make a significant return. And I think the probability is there that that will happen, but obviously much higher risk.
My thanks to Ewan, and thank you for listening to this episode of On The Money. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a rating or a review and follow the show in your podcast app. And if you get a chance, do tell a friend about it. You can join the conversation, ask questions and tell us what you'd like us to talk about via email on otm@ii.co.uk. And in the meantime, you can find more information and practical pointers on how to get the most out of your investments on the Interactive Investor website, which is ii.co.uk. See you next week.